I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This is week two, or part two, with Triumph FC. Coach Smith gave so much more insight and was very candid with me, which I do appreciate. So I hope you guys listen to this episode, and let's start this chat and head to the pitch. That brings me to the next question. Like, you're talking about the technical side. Do you guys use game film or the technology? Do you guys hedge technology to your advantage to show technical? I know that it's giving up field time and things like that, but that's...
We definitely do. Before I go on that, I did want to catch up on one point that we talked about earlier. So I'm a bit like you. I do go off. But we talked about the correct running technique and everything else. So I used to work for a club called Oldham. Way back, I used to be their chief scout. I used to do all reports for the first team. I wanted to do it because it made me watch footage, and that's what I was just talking about. I used to go along to watch a lot of games about the opposition. So I used to have to break it down how we could, as a club. See, I was down in the south. Oldham are up in Manchester area. That's where they are. They had a manager, head coach called Andy Ritchie, who used to play for Man United and Leeds. Still great guy. I still speak to him to this day. But he talked about that someone come in to try and teach the pro players how to run correctly. And I said, oh, how did that go? and I won't use the exact words he used because I'm not going to swear on the air. He said it was useless. He said they could teach him all day long how to run correctly. He said, but when you've got a 6'5" center half trying to push you over and you're trying to tussle for the ball, running correctly with your hands, you know, knee to hip and all like this doesn't mean anything. He said it's useless. So that was his thing of, again, do it in real life situations. So, yes, we do have footage, especially for the older girls. They love it. We have Trace. They like it because they can go and watch individually their stuff. I will normally watch our games on Monday morning, pick up on a lot of the stuff that I think we need to work on, breakdowns. So I'll use that to design some of the sessions for that week for that team. Is it perfect? No. Do they all watch it? Most of them only watch themselves and watch their best points, which is great. There's nothing wrong in that. But as a coach, obviously, I have to pick apart the bad parts that we're going to do. So, yeah, we use game footage. And then what I tend to do is I'll take screenshots and might take, you know, five as to the breakdown, and I'll draw arrows on it and saying, hey, look, we need to be here, just to give them a little bit of understanding. Visualizing is one thing. You still got to do it in practice. And again, it needs to be out there on the field. People need to go there. That's great if you get with older teams, there's always something going on. And, you know, maybe one player who's made a mistake cannot be there for whatever reason. And so now, you know, your session isn't quite as good as it should be, you know, as whereas if it's a college team, it's a little bit different. Or when they're younger, they tend to all be there. Not saying anything against the older kids. They just have so much going on.
This is the conversation that we have in our house, is talking about all going on, is that we're still at the age where kids are still playing multiple sports. And I'm an advocate for multi-sport athletes. I if you talk to any pro football player, baseball player, they all played multiple sports. And that's why they are very successful, I feel, some of them. I mean, if you look at Patrick Mahomes up in Kansas City, he had a choice between football and baseball. I mean, he had a full ride for either one. He chose football.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that is hindered in the soccer community. I don't know the rest of the country, but in Texas, you sign your contract, you're really saying like you're not devoting any other time to any other sport. And I feel like that hinders athletes. It's all about the player, I feel, and the player, what the player wants. And I feel like we, as North Texas, we really hinder our players to being great athletes. I was just watching about Peyton that played for last name's Peyton, Walter Peyton's son, just the other day. And he said soccer taught him how to be a better football player. And he never picked up a football until he was a freshman. He wasn't getting the looks he wanted in soccer, so he picked up a football and got a full ride scholarship to go play American football. But he goes, how he was able to move his body playing football all came from soccer. And he goes, there's things I would have learned better if I would have been able to play, if I played football earlier. It's the mechanics of body movements and things along that line. And it was very fascinating. And do you guys try to let your players have a chance to do other things, or is that it?
Absolutely. And funny enough, I just lost on my 2012 girls. I've lost a player that she chose softball. She said, you know, her passion wasn't soccer anymore. It was softball. And she went to play softball, loved the kid, would have loved to have kept her around. But she was doing both. I really like kids playing multiple sports, as long as it doesn't, then they're not missing practice. Now, she used to leave practice 15 minutes early to get the softball. Hey, that's good. I have no problem with that. But you've got to look at what Ajax do in Holland. They have all their kids in academy. Now, this is, you know, a football academy, totally pro club, who have produced some of the best players over the years and some of the best players for Holland. They have their kids doing judo and gymnastics. Why? Because it gives them different movement to develop the players. So here, we want them totally to focus on soccer. So we lose them when we really need them by 15 and 16, because they want to try other sports and they're done with soccer. And that's wrong. We need to keep them around at 15 and 16 when they're just starting to learn the game. Because again, 15 and 16 year olds don't know the game. They're just starting to learn. So, but again, they're like, well, I want to try volleyball now. Well, you should have tried volleyball 11 and 12 and 30.
That's the thing. It's I think we kind of grew up. I grew up very different. Like I could play any sport, but I had to find a way to get there. With my kids, we let them play whatever they want. We say, like, if you want to go play basketball, go try I-9, or we'll go put you in Keller basketball, whatever it may be. It's not a huge priority to be on the top level because you may not even like the game.
Right.
You know, what we've learned that Landon tried baseball. He says it's too boring. He played flag football, American flag football, and he goes, everything comes down to one person executing the play correctly. If it doesn't get executed correctly, you have to start all over. What's the point?
Yeah.
At least with soccer, if you mess up, you just pass the ball back and try to get your momentum going again. I mean, at a young age of, how old was he? 7, 8 years old, he got that. And he goes, he just fell in love with soccer and wasn't the sport. I was trying to push towards baseball.
Right.
And then that's the thing. I recently was talking, we're going to talk about other sports really quickly. Swimming. That was the advice I was given recently. Get him into swimming. When they do all their physio, if they get injured, it's all in water. And
yeah.
They go, he goes, and this was a guy that played in Mexico. And he goes, the reason why is that it strengthens the muscles differently. He goes, if you want your soccer player to be a strong soccer player on the pitch, don't make them run. Don't make them play football. Go have them join a swim team or a polo team, water polo team. He goes, they'll be someone to be reckoning with on the soccer field because their muscles will be strong enough. And we talked about the training. That was the thing that she emphasized was that you have to train on how to land on your feet correctly. And then you have to learn how to train being pushed. She goes, there's a difference between learning how to put your foot on the ground correctly and running 100 yards quickly versus running 100 yards and someone pushing you on your shoulder for 100 yards. And you have to train for both. And your arm motion might not be the same, but how your foot's hitting the ground to give you that push forward is what matters most, and strengthening that ankle. And she goes, because that's what most of her people she trains are soccer players. They aren't sprinters. And she goes, you have to train them how to make that contact with another person and still keep their balance. And that was kind of the interesting thing for me. Not knocking that, not training them, but yeah, you have to train them for game-like experience. From in practice to running to everything else. It's why I recently watched a soccer coach have a football pad, like the ones they use to push players. They had their soccer player run straight into it and roll off it and receive the ball on their right foot and roll to the right or left, depending on where the ball was coming from. But they had to be watching where the ball is coming from behind them for the pass when they made that roll. I'm like, that's almost a football move, like an actual American football move, but I'm like, that really is soccer related because you'll run up to a player, do a shimmy of some sort and roll left or roll right to get around them. And then when I was interviewing Derek Waldeck, he told me it's finding that 1%, finding that angle that you're doing to beat the player and having to constantly be looking. And it's like, we don't get taught that in our soccer here.
Yeah. And funny enough, I do, but I don't use football pads. I actually use exercise balls. Because right. Let me tell you, if you don't get the correct weight, that exercise ball and the person with that exercise ball is going to bounce you over. So we're teaching them to you know, initiate the contact, use the thing. So I teach them. And if you watch a lot of the pro clubs, they use the same things of doing that. They do a lot of technical training in sort of competition ways. So yeah, it's just I even during tryouts, I done what I saw Man City do, funny enough, and they can do it way better than my boys, but it's a little bit of a passing pattern. And then what you've got to do is you've got to chip the ball over the small goal, and then the other person either has to head it in or volley it in. So you get head in, volleying, chipping, passing. All in one thing, and we do it in a competition environment. So the boys are enjoying themselves trying to score all these goals, but also learning how to chip the ball, which was really the main thing. And of course, now this year we're allowed to head it, and they work on heading and volleying. So you get a lot of multiple techniques and doing it, and that's how the pros get away with it, rather than saying, well, we're gonna chip the ball up and down the field. They do it in fun environment.
I think that's what's missing is that we are, I think this comes, especially here in Texas, and I can only base it on Texas because Texas is a very heavy football state. We have, I call them Roman Coliseums designed for football at every yeah. high school. And that holds more than some English premier teams.
yes.
And they're probably better than some of those fields that they're playing on in the UK for the leagues that they have there. And it just blows my mind that we want to be this force of reckoning with soccer in this country. Soccer is becoming more and more popular. I mean, it just replaced the NHL becoming the fourth most watched sport in the United States now. And it's like, how do you transition into that? And it blows my mind. And this brings me to my question is, your resources, where are you guys out of then? Where do you guys practice? Where do you guys train? What type of facility do you guys use or have?
So we're out of the colony now. Originally, I started in Coppell. I don't want to go too much into things went on in Coppell, but we sort of got pushed out of there. Then we went into Louisville. Now we're based in the colony. We have a city-owned field. We lease it a year at a time. We've been there 4 years. We have our own lights there. The city allow us to do what we like with the field. They just they keep it and maintain it. I do a little bit in case things are not good. But we bought generator lights, so we have our own lights, and we sort of look after it. So it is ours. It has a parking lot right alongside it. It's right by a school. We have our own porta potty out there, so we're self-sufficient totally. We also have a storage trailer there, where I have lots and lots of equipment. So being a non-profit club, if we have any money left over, we tend to buy equipment. We have goals, we have hurdles, we have poles, we have lots of small goals. We have mannequins, gosh, I must use mannequins at every practice, and the small goals. We're a club that I think is definitely, and you talk about the parents, I think we have a good relationship with our parents. We're very much a family club where I listen to parents. Now, not all parents have idiotic things, you know, that it might sound idiotic to people that are uneducated, but doing this 21 years, some of the questions that the parents ask or complain about, some of them are quite valid. So I don't ever bash the parents, although, you know, when you lose kids for the wrong reasons, you tend to be not understanding towards them. And that's happened this summer. They'll find out sooner or later that what they had was excellent and where they're going is not going to be the best. But hey, that ain't my problem. So resources wise, we're also based out of Wiley, and we're also based out of Dallas or Wiley Murphy area. We have coaches over there. Again, we're not looking to try and grow to this 40 team club. We like being who we are. We it's easily manageable. We have one lady who does all our admin. She does everything. She is phenomenal. Without her, the club probably wouldn't run. And her son played on my 93 boys. She has no dog in the fight anymore. She just loves doing it and gets a little bit of pocket money. Not that we pay her enough.
Now, you mentioned not having a large team. So this goes back to philosophy for you guys, I would assume. Would you guys feel like, I guess I'll use Wilco with Dutch FC. He told me it's like you really want to have about 2 to 3 teams per age group, because if you have anything more than that, you lose something along the way. The farther away you get from that first team, the more you lose.
Yeah.
And that each squad has their role, and they're within that. Works well with 2. Sometimes you can squeeze in a 3rd one. Would you guys like to have more of that mentality then? Like a competitive team and a developmental competitive team to work with it, so you guys can, a player, as he put it, I'd have to find my note on it, but he talked about a person that is a playmaker on the A squad might just be they won't be a playmaker, but they'll be a support player, and they will be there to help guide them to and that they'll have their playmaker, and then a playmaker might be a support player on the A squad, and vice versa. It's like it's every player has their role within their own squad.
Yeah, for sure. I think that having two teams, you know, going down to a third, then you run in, and even having two teams in the squad definitely is beneficial. The problem is that starts leading into issues. You know, why isn't my kid on the first team? My kid's as good as that player in there and everything else. Well, of course, you can always bring them up and show them that they're not quite right, but then that doesn't quite work. But I definitely think there's support for two teams, let's say an A and a B team, for sure. Or even having two A teams that can help each other under different coaches and for different reasons, you know?
Because I think that brings me to my question is because I feel like coaches here struggle. If a player, you have a single player, not the whole team, not three or four, you talked about it earlier with the bigger clubs, is that you have one or two players that are excelling and they keep their cards close and they don't want to lose these players because their whole team will fall apart. But within the same club with the smaller club, if you had a player that's on the B team or the other squad that might mix better with a player on the A squad, will you let them flow between them or use them as a support player on one versus the other? Or would you let them be on their team because that's the team they made a commitment for the year?
No, for sure. I mean, it's great. And what I tend to do is if we do have two teams and we've had it, I tend to like coaching both of them, so that we can see the development in each players and definitely bring some players up. I used to have 205 girls teams and I ended up with four players from the second team that are now playing on the first team. We only have one team now, but they moved when we still had two teams. So they developed and being a coach, I was able to see, you know, their potential and work with them and get them moved up, which is exactly what you want to do. So I do like having the same coach on both teams because then you're the coach that sees that potential and you're the one that can develop them and get them and play them in a role that's definitely going to help them when they're playing, let's say, on the first team. But yeah, having two teams would be ideal. It's just getting that amount of players being a smaller club to come through. We tend to do it at the younger ages. And then when we hit U11, we tend to make one team out of the two. That's what tends to happen. You know, we're not like the FC Dallases of this world. Again, nothing wrong where they can grow 14 teams and suddenly, you know, you've got all these teams. We don't have that luxury.
And I'm not trying to bash FC Dallas because they are the MLS team in the area and they have their method to the madness. But the analogy I was given, the farther and farther away you get from the first team, the less and less gravity there is for players to stay or to grow. And so if you have 14 teams, let's say in the U15 age group, I'm sorry, but the best coaches are going to be in the top three teams. It doesn't matter how big of a club you are, if you're FC Dallas. A great coach wants to be the top two coach in the club. And when you have down to the 15, how do you advise parents when they're chasing the badge versus the development? What advice would you give parents when they're looking at that stage? Because I feel like if parents are honest, that little Johnny or little Susie are not cream of the crop yet, but they have a chance to be. How would you advise them when they go searching then?
It's ironic. Way back on my 03 girls who eventually turned into 02 girls, my team manager's daughter there, I won't name names, but she was on the small side, didn't always get a lot of playing time. And I said, look, you've got to stick with it. You have to stick with this. She is going to be a phenomenal player by 15 and 16. Of course, the parents got frustrated. They wanted more. When we went into the age pure change and we had to go to an 02, she went down to, she stayed in the 03 as that was her age group. Well, guess what? She ended up captain in her high school, ended up going to college. And everything I told them was true. I'm still very good friends with the parent. I went and watched her play in high school. But of course, they don't believe you at a young age that hey, they want more, they want more, they want more. You know, it's sort of hollow. What can I say? Hollow. You know, conditions for them. They only look at their child and don't look at the long term benefits of. Don't worry, once she gets, you know, to 15 and things start evening out and she starts growing, she's going to be a phenomenal player. They're just that. Is probably something that's wrong here, not on the parents' side. They're paying a lot of money. And when you're in Europe and all these other places that don't pay a lot of money, you see a coach telling them, just be patient. It doesn't matter. That's good. You know, when somebody's paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, they want their kids to play. They don't want you telling them, don't worry, they're going to be a good kid at 15 and 16. They just, so that's the thing. I was just glad. I knew the kid was going to be phenomenal, and she was. And I think she is at, I want to say she's playing at Arkansas.
So that brings me to the club side is, do you have parents that come in and this is kind of the side I haven't got to yet on my podcast, is to come in and talk about the club. Parents that have had players that play for you and says like, look, this is what we were told X years ago. This is where our child is today. Like you said, she was on the smaller side. Give it time. And by 15, she started to accelerate. Now, that being said, I feel like this is what's missing. It's that we don't have those stories here being shared enough, even with the smaller clubs. I think if you had that angle where you have a testimony of a parent saying, look, I stuck it out for 6 years here. We may have had a couple of different coaches in the time frame, but they all told us the same message of give it time. Yes, we're paying a ton of money for this, but this is what happened with our player. Because we found the right coach, we found the right environment for our player to develop. I think this is what's missing. And I feel like smaller clubs have the upper hand with this because, like you said, you're still in contact with them. I think coaches that have a great impact on their players and the families will do anything to help that coach. I mean, I only have a 9-year-old, but any coach that my son plays for that I have faith in, I'll bend over backwards for to do anything I can.
And I think you're right. I mean, we don't do enough. Just purely, and that's based on mine, you know, just going back to the word development and the teacher thing, you don't go into the school and say, are you going to teach my kid? It goes back to that development. So my job is to get them, first of all, is to get them into high school and playing in high school and then get them into college. We've got many kids in the college. I don't sit here and post all over social media, oh, we got this kid in the college and this kid signs, because that's what I'm supposed to do. We're not coming from England. We all coaches have egos. Don't get me wrong. Of course we do.
Right.
But it's not, I'm not sitting here on social media boasting about everything we do. We do it quietly in the background, which is why many people still don't even know we exist. You know, they know of these other clubs and I go, oh, we've been going 20 years longer than them. And so they're like, oh, never heard of you. Well, that's because you've never bothered to look out for us. And I don't stand there on social media and boast about everything we do. You know, there I had a kid and I have loads of successes with kids that have been in college. But or one of the kids I got out of Denton Rec trained her and she done really well early on. And many bigger clubs try to recruit her. But I talked to mum and dad early on. That, listen, stick with me. I'll develop her. She'll get where she needs to be. She went and played in Southern Miss for 3 years, graduated with honors. She's now a doctor. Absolutely phenomenal. And they just said, everything you told us would happen. And again, we don't use her as a success story, but what we used to do is we used to put a newsletter together. So I got her to write about her daily occurrences in college so that when people say, oh, yeah, I want to play D1, that you read her notes and everything else and realize she was getting up at 4:30 in the morning. She was getting ready for the day. She was getting, you know, at her practice. She was doing that. She would finish practice and then she would go to her thing. People need to understand it's a lot of work if you're going to play at a D1 college.
That was the conversation I've had with a lot of people. One of the coaches I actually really like, where I got my idea for my podcast was actually Keaton Barclay. And he has his own podcast called Down the Tunnel. And he interviews coaches and players from all over the country and actually all over the world. And that was the thing. It's like he talks about the college grind and how hard it is, because a lot of players, parents don't realize these players are signing up for 2-a-days in the summer and then getting ready for the next step, whatever else they're working for schoolwork. Then once they're done with schoolwork, it's personal training. It's not just team training. And it really, like you said, it just blows people's minds. And it's like my son has, and that's the thing. It's like we have to stay true to our path and the path that we want to be on for our kids.
And there are other avenues. Not everyone needs to go to a big D1 school. There are some great D2 schools that I've had players go to that suited their needs, and they played and they enjoyed it. You know, it's not everybody needs to be signed to a big D1 school and go in there, because if you can get through college playing with discipline and everything else, then hey. So we've had lots of successes like that, putting people in college. We just don't advertise it. You know, I got to tell you, a lot of my 05 girls or 06s before the age pure change are still playing and playing at ECNL level that I trained from a young age. And again, had I not put those foundations in place, they wouldn't be playing ECNL. In fact, the bigger clubs didn't want them because they weren't kids that showed up in anything. But that makes me proud, because U7, I think 3/4 of the team are still playing. And it's phenomenal.
I think, like we talked earlier, the golden years of playing at the younger age, if you get that foundation and it's fun to play, when they actually have to go grind it out at the older ages, at U14 and older, it's more enjoyable. It doesn't matter if it's hard. I think if you have the mentality that this is something you love and enjoy, and you have that enjoyment and the memories of it being enjoyed when you go older, it just trickles into it. It's like I tell my 9-year-old, it's like you should never have a job or do anything you don't like. Everything you should like. And it's like, I told my son, I go, one of my favorite jobs was landscaping. I go, it was mindless work.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I got to see my progress. At the end of the day, I got to see, I mean, there was one time I moved 20,000 pavers, which are 2x6 bricks. And I moved 20,000 of them by myself. And then I had to go move 3,000 of them back because we ordered too many. And I moved too many because I just did as I was told. But I never hated my work. Those days were long and hard, but I found enjoyment in it. And I feel like at a young age, I learned how to work.
But it's you see, and that's the problem here, especially in DFW. I've only ever worked in DFW, so I can't speak about other areas. We want to go too quickly. We want to be winning the World Cup at U10 and U11. Hence that these teams are playing a different format a year before they need to. Well, that's what we're going to be playing in a year's time. Well, why don't you wait until then? You see, and so we're killing the fun for these kids. And when you kill the fun, by the time it gets to the grind and they haven't had the proper coaching at 15, the amount of stories you hear, my kid was really good, but they quit at 15. That's probably you was in with the wrong coach who didn't make it fun. And so at 15 and 16, when your kid's not very good anymore because they didn't get the right coaching, you now want to quit. Or you're behind everybody else that because the people that are, you know, were developed at other clubs are now overtaking you. So we don't allow too much. And again, that word development gets thrown out here. Coaches aren't allowed to develop like they should be. They should allow the kids to play, like you said, be creative, make mistakes. Let's laugh. The amount of people that come to my practices and go, it's so refreshing to see the kids laugh and joke. I go, are they not allowed to? It's ridiculous. Why aren't they allowed to laugh and joke at practice? If they're working hard, why can't laughter be part of it?
Everyone wants a robot. Everyone wants these kids. And this is where we started to actually talk. It was, and this is where I feel like our culture in America, and especially in Texas, is that everyone wants that $5 trophy that you could go to the store and buy, and that 50-cent medal, and just so they can post on social media, or they don't want little Johnny or little Susie to feel the pain of not being on a winning team. I don't know how many times I've seen on social media, my daughter's team is not winning, but they're doing better job formation than my older daughter's team or older son's team that are winning. And I'm like, everyone's like, stay. And half the parents like, move, because they aren't winning. I'm like, no. It's like, why do people are so concerned about winning league. And at the end of the day, the only thing in my mind as a parent that matters is that tournaments. You go to tournaments, you play in tournaments. Either you're playing in a tournament to learn something or you're playing in a tournament to win. And your coach should be telling you why you're doing this tournament and what the outcome goal is.
Yeah.
And I think like league play, like I really don't care if my son, my daughter's team, I think have won 2 games out of 6 games so far this season, or maybe 7 games. And we don't care because we're watching her when she dribbles the ball up playing defender, her teammates coming back and covering. They aren't little cats hurting little 4 kids all following the ball. They're spreading out, which makes it 10 times harder for them to actually play soccer when the other team is just ball chasing.
Yeah. Well, it also goes back to how parents view it, depending on their area. Now, I'll tell you about a parent I had that lived in Coppell. Coppell was very affluent when I first moved here. Maybe it still is. I've long since been left from Coppell. My team was playing in D1, so she had her daughter playing on my team in D1 Girls Classic League, when Girls Classic League was the only thing. There was no ECNL. We were in D1. She had her other daughter playing on an FC Dallas team that played in Plano Division 1. Okay, so we're all selling merchandise and yard signs and everything else. I go around her house once to drop something off. She has an FC Dallas yard sign. No, don't have a Triumph one. She has an FC Dallas one. And yet the daughter was playing at a higher level with us than the FC Dallas. So I realized then it was a status symbol. Oh, my kid plays for Solon. My kid plays for FC Dallas. My kid plays for Sting. It's more of a status symbol. Whereas if somebody says, well, my kid plays for Triumph. Who? Never even heard of them. Oh, well, we play in Girls Classic League D1. Oh, we're in Plano, but my kid plays for FC Dallas. That's the difference. It's a name. We can't compete with that.
No, you can't. But I always ask what team, like what level, like what are you on, the first team, the second team, or the 15th team? Because it makes a difference.
But like it doesn't. That's the problem. And that's where I really wanted to come onto the podcast, just to make people realize that the badge on your shirt shouldn't matter. The color of your shirt doesn't matter to a college coach. College coach doesn't care who you play for. He doesn't care about your wins and losses, or she doesn't care about your wins and losses. Only looking at you as a player and how you're developed, which is what I go back to. It's like, it's crazy.
And that was the conversation I had with Matt Montaigne. He was recruiting at the colleges. And he says, if I couldn't go watch a player go play, I could go watch him warm up. And if they were actually doing warm-ups correctly, that was, and he said it on the episode, it's like that was more telling of who they were as an individual than how they ever played, because we can always train them. If they had good work ethics to get ready for a game, I can only imagine how good they played in a game. And he goes, we can train you to be a better goalie.
I tell my players all the time, my older girls. College coaches would be watching you warm up. They want to see whether you're prepared for the game. And I always tell them when they, because, you know, again, at the older ages, they're very lax in how they warm up. And they look at me when I get onto them, that you're not warming up correctly for the game. They're like, you know, mind you, when I warmed up, when I played, you know, it was barely a little jog and a quick stretch on the quads and everything else. And then you played until I started to get injured as you get older. And then you start to realize that warming up is very important. But yeah, I tell them all the time.
And that goes back to the whole badge thing. It's like, if you look at some of these kids and that are out there playing, and this is where I actually ran across you. It was commenting on someone's post on social media, and it was me. I saw that you liked my comment, or you commented on it. And it really made me think, I am tired of the mentality of, like we talked about development and what you guys actually do with development. And the coaches don't look at what badge you're wearing. At the end of the day, you're just a number. Do you fit the profile that I need for my squad right now? And your profile could be everything from 2 through 11. And great, they're going to take you if you have that profile, just because you're a utility player. But that's the problem, is that we get so heavily focused on, if I go play for this club, that we can't, I'll get looked at more. Yes, you may be looked at on a national level. And this is the conversation that I had with the guys that I recorded last week, was how do we change that? How do we make excluding the smaller clubs from being able to play in ECNL? Well, I found out how much it costs to have a team in ECNL recently, and I about died. And how these bigger clubs are really paying for it through the other teams that they have within the club. And that's not fair to my son that has to pay for fees for the teams that are playing on ECNL. Maybe $10 coming out of our monthly fees. But why should I subsidize these other teams' fees? And I don't think parents are realizing when they go play for the larger clubs, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
And this is where the conversation moved to. And this is where my brain was racking, because you probably know him, Skylar Simmons. He played for Patty way back in the day out in Keller. And he runs Cross City. And I asked, and he made some comment to me recently about clubs. And it's like, why do we have ECNL? And why are every club being excluded from it if you don't meet the requirement? If you want to go play in ECNL, you have to meet these requirements. And like, but you're taking out true competition then. You're creating an elitist mentality. And as a smaller club, I feel like you guys get the short end of the stick for this.
Always. But it's I have no problem with that, as long as ECNL just stuck to ECNL. But then they added ECRL. Then they added other leagues. And so now, if you're excluding everybody, so again, I won't name them, but there's a club there that'll say, yeah, we have a roster spot for you. So you sign the contract. You have no clue which team you're on. And so you could end up on the eighth team and not what you tried out for. And you've already signed the contract. And that's wrong. So I have no problem with ECNL being an elite league. And let's do one for the boys, but then leave everything else alone. You know, Girls Classic League was incredible back in the day. If you made one of the two divisions, you've made it. And I love that thought. And then, you know, forget that the best players have gone off to ECNL. That's great, because that's where it should be. But we didn't stop there. You know, let's create DA. Well, that was a failure because they all wanted the teams to play the same way. And ridiculous. And now your own soccer federation is cutting out creativity because you've got to play the same way as the national team. 4-3-3. Oh, my God. So yeah. But then, you know, then that goes away. So now we got GA for the girls. We got DPL for the girls. You know, we've got ECNL Regional League North Texas. We've got the new MPL league, because MPL is still around, but anybody gets in there. And so the new one's club based. And then we have, you know, all these leagues, and there just isn't the amount of players. There just isn't. Hence that anybody you talk to went through tryouts. Let me tell you, if they got a team, I applaud them this year. There are many teams that fell apart just because they couldn't get enough players.
And the big clubs are just cannibalizing it.
Of course they are, because they have access to all these leagues that everyone wants to be elite. Going back to that parent who refused to buy a Triumph yard sign and yet had an FC Dallas yard sign. It's because everybody thinks they're elite. Listen, there ain't enough elite players. There certainly ain't enough elite coaches. We've got way too many elite leagues.
I was told that we have an elite issue in this country. The word elite doesn't mean elite. Everything is elite. And this is where we can have a sidebar conversation later on it, because I feel like we can ramble on for hours on this. But going back to the Triumph more. Now, how do you guys recruit for players? Is it through social media posts? Is it through word of mouth? Obviously,
Bit of both. Obviously, social media has taken over. So as you see, I'm very active on social media. I like to be very honest on social media, whether it's the politically correct thing to do. I answer exactly how I believe it. If I, you know, just like I said earlier, where I think every coach is cutting corners in development, whether they tell you they are or not, it's we're having to do that. So social media is a big thing. I love Team Player and what they've are trying to do. I think that in 2 years, Team Player will be the way to go. Is it good now? It's pretty good now. Has it benefited us? Not quite as we would hope, let's put it that way, but it's in its infancy. So everything now, for sure, is social media. I mean, years ago when I first started this, you had to put an advertisement in the pitch to advertise your tryouts and everything else. And then the pitch got sent out. It was a publication, and people looked for you there. That was it. The pitch is still there, but it's online now. Nobody advertises in the pitch. Everybody's advertising for tryouts for the next dog. And you know, we've got pre-ECNL leagues and everything else. I mean, how can you be pre-ECNL if you don't even have ECNL as a club? I mean, come on. that makes me laugh. You know, I'm going to start putting, I think I'm going to be pre-national team, because, hey, who knows? The players could be going up to the national team. We can't. Yeah, you know, it's silly monikers that we put on our teams instead of people looking for coaches. But again, it goes back to people are looking for the next elite league. They're not looking at the coach. And yeah, so they miss the whole side of development. Hence that we're still, and again, I talk about this region. I don't know how it is in other regions. It's why we're still lacking in development. Now people will say, oh, no. We develop players here. We don't. We absolutely do not develop them to their best potential. We just don't.
I know you said you can't with private training. I feel like my son has a private lesson, but it's more learning how to properly take that proper first touch, or how to control the ball, or proper striking the ball. Right. And it's all about the simple fundamental things that are not being taught in practices, because sadly coaches can't focus on that because it's all being missed. They have to live up to this expectation of my player must be X, Y, and Z. Well, my son just went through about a 3-month great time to go through it tryout time frame where the lack of internal hustle was missing. But technically speaking, it's there. Like, he has good first touches. He has great, but parents don't want that. They want, like you said, the badge, the symbol, the eliteness. And I feel like the private coach has told us, like, this is what he needs. This is where his mind needs to be. If he's not here, there's no point of doing this. There's no point of him playing soccer. He needs to go back to rec then.
Well, I totally agree. And in some ways, the private trainer, absolutely. I used to do a clinic of shooting and finishing, but ball striking, how to teach him how to ball strike. And a lot of those kids that come along were my 05s that are all playing ECNL. And people are like, where did you learn to strike a ball like that? Well, of course, that's I used to teach him. So you're exactly right. I try and do it with my players now. But again, teaching a kid how to strike a ball every week becomes boring. It's tough unless, you know, we probably do it once a month at practice. But I also put it into fun things where they'll have a ball on a cone in front of them. And so when the kid strikes a ball across, look, I can get a touch. And if I can knock the ball off before you can hit it with my first touch, now we're working on first touch as well. So again, I try and do it in a fun environment. So the private trainer definitely has, you know, some part to play. I just don't like private trainers, one, that are working on, you know, a speed and agility. Okay, how can you do speed and agility? We already talked about that. Physical speed is only one thing. You know, right. How are you working on anything else if it's just you, you know, and not making decisions? You know, if you're just doing dribbling the whole time at a private trainer, how is that benefiting you? Just dribbling around cones. Cones don't move. So
right.
Again, I was going to say, again, there are parts there, but if you're going to a private trainer that is teaching you that week in, week out to dribble around a cone, it's no wonder they struggle and you're throwing your money away.
And that's why I always laugh when I see these kids that have the dribble up and all these new systems, like the dribbling mats and like how they do like the V taps and V movements. Oh, yeah. And it's like, I find it funny because, like, my son will go to these soccer camps and these kids can do phenomenal footwork within a 3-foot range of themselves. But outside of that 3-foot range, as soon as they get applied pressure, they lose the ball.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind. Like, parents are not seeing, like, oh, my kid can do all these fancy footwork, but as soon as pressure is applied, they lose the ball. It's great that they have the confidence, but if they can't move the ball outside that 3 feet, once they can receive the ball, like, what, like, how does it correspond? And it's someone asked me, like, what do I think of the whole, I'm not doing a bash toka or anything because I don't know enough about it. I go, they're working in perfect environments and getting you hundreds of touches very quickly. Then you can get in a practice, but are they realistic touches? I go, is it a bad pass that you didn't get from behind that you have to pull forward? Or is it a, or no, they're putting it to the right spot to your foot every single time on a perfect ground with no interference. Yes, it creates muscle memory, muscle repetition, but it doesn't create that creativity side that we're missing.
It definitely doesn't create creativity. Now, my teams have done choker as free sessions, especially when we got rained off. And I love it. Would I want them to do it week in, week out? No, once, twice a month, definitely good for them. Getting the touches, the repetitions, learning the correct technique for volleying the ball and all stuff like that. Hey, again, that's something I teach, volleying the ball, you know, all those little things. See, again, it's we're trying to put the most complete player out there. And it's not just one building block. There has to be so much. Like you said, you know, when I use the yoga balls on one of the teams, the parents are like, what's he doing? They don't understand. That's all part of the building blocks of development and helping these kids along to understand, not just dribbling around cones. That isn't what we're doing.
Right. And I think that's what parents want to go out and see. They want to see these kids dribbling around cones. They want to see certain techniques. It's game-like scenarios. I have a different perspective, and you have yours on private coaching, and but I feel like it comes down to who's doing it. I feel like there's a lot of private coaches that charge a lot of money, and I don't see it becomes repetition. It comes the same thing over and over again, and nothing new. It's not game-like. It's not changing. It's not, and it's hard to do that in the one-on-one session. But
yeah.
But and I feel like that's where I feel like kids are missing that park time today, and that's a whole nother dialogue. So let's get back to the club.
well, I will get there, but I did want to make one comment. So yes. I just posted a comment on Instagram about this private group training. They're not here in the US. I think they're elsewhere. They got the kids going over cones and then volleying the ball back to him at chest height, the one that's throwing it in, then he moves the cone, going over the cones, and then volleys it with his left, volleys it with his right, and everything else. So I just wrote, what is that actually teaching him? Well, it's actually teaching him to volley the ball back at a high level. So when it comes to him in the game and he volleys that ball and it's now to his teammate around neck height, what's the teammate supposed to do with it? Because that's what you're teaching him. So I wrote, you know, why do you keep producing this rubbish, basically? And I haven't had a reply yet. I haven't seen anything there. But I don't know why people post this on social media and think it's acceptable. But that's where I'm going. And I see a lot of the trainers here in this country doing the same. And you go, oh, my God, why are we doing this? It's not acceptable. But anyway.
And that goes back to the whole thing. It's like it's my big thing with Landon, my son, and this is the one thing I always ask the private trainers to work on, is scanning. We go watch so much soccer. We watch so much soccer, all age groups. We went to go watch FC Dallas U19 play in the Generation Cup. And Landon was, we were there watching, and Landon's coach was there, and he goes, why didn't he do this? He goes, what did he forget to do? He goes, he didn't scan. So he passed the ball back immediately because he didn't know where the defender was. And he goes, yes, you're right. He goes, what do you need to do every time before you receive that ball? He goes, looking over my shoulder, scanning. And that's the one thing. It's like, he goes, you have to get at the young age. I'm watching all the soccer at young ages, especially U14 and up. And you don't see any of them scanning. And they don't start teaching it until they're 16, 17 years old. And it should be muscle memory by that point of time. It should not be being just brought into the game. And that is the one thing I realized that in this area, it's like, if you have a good coach, they force you to scan.
You can actually train it. And there is an Irish guy, Ian McCaskin, or whatever his name is, has lots of sessions on it that I like. I don't like everything he does, but it definitely helps. And so there are things there with different colored. So just imagine this, okay, that, and I talked about this on my youth license course with some of the coaches, and his, not his theory, but there are theories out there. Don't put pennies on them, put headbands on them. So now you see, you're not just looking for the color. You've got to look up and look for the colored headband. That is your team. So now you've got to look way beyond his body. you got to start looking up to see where he is. So one colored headband. So I have loads of them. And again, that's what we do. There are things where you've got to touch the floor with a colored wristband, certain things. That's part of his training. And the memories and stuff that go on there. It's really good, some of his stuff. But just little things like that. Like I said, take away the pennies, put on the headbands. You're already teaching the scan.
And that's the thing. I feel like as a parent, like that's the one thing we talk about, because that's one of the things that he asked at a young age. Why are they always looking around? I'm like, they're looking for where everyone's at. And we talk about Messi quite a bit because I feel like he's a great example of this. He spends the first 5-10 minutes of a match not even playing the game, really. He is watching everyone, scanning the pitch, watching how people are behaving, how they're moving, so he can adjust his game. And I go, Landon, that's what you have to do, but you have to go into the game already knowing that. And he goes, how do you do that? I go, sadly, you have to sit in front of a TV and watch them play the game.
Yeah.
And I go, you have to spend time watching soccer, and especially your opposing team. I go, right now it's nearly impossible because you can't log in and watch your opposing team unless you know their information for the camera system they have. And at a young age, like, he understands this. It's like, why are we missing this at the older age groups? And this is the conversation that I feel like parents need to have with coaches, is like, how are you developing this? Like you said, you use headbands. I've never heard of that. Instead of keeping the one thing that really made me think long and hard, Landon's private coach said that you don't keep your head up, keep your chest up. If you keep your chest up, your head can't go down.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, all these years, I've been telling Landon, keep his head up. No, keep your chest up. And it's like, yeah. And I was talking to another coach, goes, that's how I do it. It's not keeping your head up. I tell my girls to keep their chest up. I'm like, oh, I guess never heard you in practice say that before. But all of his girls know that that's what they need to be doing. So we've covered a lot of my questions that I've had. If someone wants to reach out to you guys, what's the best way of doing that?
Probably through our website. We have everybody on there. That is www.triumphfootball.com, because when we first originally put it Triumph together, you know, football, there wasn't enough real football on TV. So we had to use the Spanish term football. And so it's www.triumphfootball.club. That is our website. You can find most of our philosophies on the club. Everything else there that we follow religiously, you know, like having the kids, can the kids play other sports? All the questions that I've answered are all on there. And you can find about us and find about me as a coach and everything else. We definitely get players referred to us. It's been a struggle this summer, I must admit. We've done well to keep all of our teams and add some new teams. This summer was probably not like any summer I've seen before, and it seems to get worse every year. But again, I think that's adding all the new leagues, of which, see, people don't understand that with our affiliation with Storm, we have access to most of these. The only ones we don't have access to are ECNL, because that's a closed shop. We have access to all the other leagues, and they don't realize that we play under a different name, but it's still the same team.
Now that being said, there's one other question regarding with that. With all the other leagues and being able to have with Storm, do you guys have pathway programs then for players? I know that your main goal is to develop players. You said it right out of the gate, is to develop players for the next phases for college and whatnot. So whatnot. Do you guys have pathway programs with affiliated clubs that are for the older age groups? Like some clubs have affiliations with teams in Mexico to I know that Villarreal has connections to Villarreal in Spain, but they all have like their own unique thing.
Yeah, we do. We actually do with another great coach, Reynaldo, who has just got back from Mexico. Funny enough, I just got a text and it reminded me I need to message him. But yeah, there are programs that they can go on there. What I will say is that probably most of the kids that I get are not going to be along the lines of, hey, we're going pro in another company. You never know. Most of the times what tends to happen is the kids that I develop and develop well end up going to a program that we can't offer, of which I will say, hey, great. Just much like the girls that have headed on to ECNL, we don't have access to ECNL. So if they're good enough and they get offered a spot, I will say, hey, great job. Good, you know, I've done my job and I've moved them on to that level. Does it frustrate me? Of course it is, because I was the one that got them there. But if that's the next platform that they need, then that's where they need to go.
Awesome. I understand your frustration, but that's awesome to hear that you're willing to let them go and not hold a grudge against the player. But it's I don't view it as you holding the grudge against the player or the family. It is holding it against the elite symbols that is there. I'm going to ask my favorite question so I can give you back some of your time since we're half hour over what I planned. But I always ask at the end of all my interviews, who is your greatest influence as a player and who is your greatest influence as a coach?
As a player, there's many. So when I was a kid growing up, I used to sort of like playing in goal and ended up playing in goal when I really didn't want to. So there are many, many. Gordon Banks was probably my first sort of hero, and played in goal for England at the 1970s in Mexico and made that great save against Pelé. He was phenomenal. I was a Manchester City fan through sort of default. I had a good friend at school whose uncle used to play for Manchester City, hence the Triumph plays in Sky Blue. And all of our teams are named after City players or ex-City players, whatever. So I was a Colin Bell, Mike Summerby, and I'm glad Mike Summerby's still around in being an ambassador for Man City. Francis Lee probably was my idol growing up. I always wanted to play like him. He was probably one of the first players that used to dive in the penalty area. So before we complain that it's all been the foreigners in England, Francis Lee was phenomenal at diving. For sure, he was there. Then a great influence on my coaching side was a guy who was my sort of state coach who used to run Middlesex FA and do all the coaching, Gordon Bartlett. He was an incredible semi-pro head coach, manager, as you want to call him. But he was very influential on my early coaching careers. He was the one that forced me to do so. Back in the early days, you only done a prelim badge in England. That was all they had. And they had two. You either done the prelim first and then you done the pro, or you didn't even bother going to do the pro. So you just had your prelim badge and that was all they had. Then they started to convert it into UEFA, of which I got my UEFA C. And then I was on the very first course of the UEFA B. I did not want to do it. I was working as a bricklayer, semi-pro playing, and I didn't want to do it. But he had forced me to go. He had paid for it and told me I could pay him back. So I done coaching camps in the summer for Middlesex. So he was very influential of pushing me and getting me to where I needed to be. Then as I started to learn more and more about coaching, because really there wasn't too many coaching books around back in those days. Now you can find content everywhere on Instagram, YouTube. I mean, you could be a YouTube coach like forever and think you're good. And put on a session without actually coaching it. But hey, that's another thing. There's plenty of YouTube coaches out there. Then Johan Cruyff was a big influence. I like his theory on how to play it. Now in today's day and age, obviously Pep is phenomenal, and we talked about scanning. Let me tell you, Pep. If you listen to the players, Pep has changed a lot of the players' thoughts. Most of the players are taught to get on the half turn and scan. Pep doesn't want that. He doesn't want his players to get on the half turn. Everything should be third man run. So it's up, it's back, play it into the third man run that's behind you, because he thinks that the ball can move quicker than you getting on the half turn and maybe getting caught and everything else. So Pep's theory is different than a lot of the stuff that we were taught. But Pep is influenced by Johan Cruyff and all the Rinus Michels, all the total football stuff. which I love. And that has always been my way. I think part of my upbringing as well also influenced me. I was never taught how to dribble. So I love to see people being able to dribble and take people on confidently. Hence that I don't give them lots and lots of fancy moves. I'm just trying to teach them how to unbalance a defender, how they do it and with what move. Really doesn't matter. But certainly my influence is on, I like to play the game how I think it should be played, you know, with passing, with moving, with skill, you know, first touch. If most of the time people come and watch my older teams play, they're like, wow, their first touch is excellent. And I take pride in that.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. This week, talking with Coach Richard. It was awesome. I feel like every week I learn something new. But there's an underlining message that I'm starting to hear. And I think you guys need to start paying attention to it. And if you are listening to this podcast, I hope you guys are learning what I'm learning. The word development is overused and overutilized. Now, you might be wondering what I'm saying, but to develop a player means so much more to these coaches than just teaching the fundamentals. It's building a foundation, like Coach said. It's building the foundation, building, laying the concrete, laying the building the walls, putting the roof, and doing things in the right order and not skipping steps. Now, as he is a smaller club, they do have ways of working their way into ECNL and all those other programs. As I have learned, these programs are very hard to get into. But these smaller clubs have ways of doing it. Now, I hope if you're in the area where Triumph FC is, check out their Facebook page, check out their website, listen to what they have to say. If you reach out to Richard, I know he will answer your questions. He's always answered all mine. And I feel like I'm a pest at times with all these coaches and everyone. But take the time to learn who these people are. Just because they aren't a big name, we should be proud of these small clubs, proud of who they are, and proud of what they bring to the Metroplex. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.